Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast, starring Matt Levy and Mike Staub. We love video games and have embarked on a journey to index the greatest video games of all time into our very own Hall of Fame. Here's the show. Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hey, Matt. Happy 150.
Happy 150. The confetti is coming down from the ceiling. We're blowing the horns. Everything is right now rainbows and unicorns because we are recording our 150th episode. Congratulations.
Yeah, congrats, man. It's been, what, a little over 3 years?
Just about. Yeah, a little over 3 years, which in dog years, we'd be recording for over 20 years right now.
I know. It's crazy. That's crazy to think if we were dogs. Sadly, we're not. Sadly, life is more difficult. But
poor us.
We've complicated things as like, humans.
We want to do something fun for 150. And rather than just putting a silly old game in our Hall of Fame, we thought, let's talk about our own personal Hall of Fames and talk about what are the three games that maybe they're not the best video games. Maybe they're not the games we replay the most, but the three games that we would say, if someone said, what are your favorite video games? Who is Mike Staub and what video games does he, what engulfs him?
Sure.
I think that's sort of the essence of what we did here.
Sure. Yeah. No, I think that's great. And I think it's a fun idea, especially to celebrate 150. For those of you who are listening, this might be the first episode you catch. It will help you introduce, it'll help us introduce ourselves to you, like what you're getting into and what you're in for by listening to this. And those who have been listening to the podcast since the beginning, one, you're the best. Thank you so much. And two, it'll even give you a clearer picture of what we're dealing with. And when I say I don't like something or I like something, or you can kind of put kind of a ribbon on it. So yeah, let's do this.
Excellent. So I would like you to start it off, Mike, as my co-host on this podcast. Give me your first Mike Staub game. They don't have to be in any specific order. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think there's a 3-2-1 or 1-2-3, but give us one of your three.
So I kind of did it 3-2-1 just because I figured that's what I would do. So my top three, which should surprise no one, my top three are all Super Nintendo games. And that's just how it goes. If we get past that, we go to the first, the top 10, you will definitely see later games in there for sure. But my top three are Super Nintendo games. I think it's just, it's one of those things where the Super Nintendo was really gearing up and hitting like its stride when I was like 9 and 10 years old. So of course, these are going to be my favorite games. So number three, my top three is, I think we've also talked about all three of these games that I'm going to bring up. Number three on my list, on my top three games ever, is something that should surprise absolutely no one. It's Mega Man X. A game I've been playing like ad nauseum. This is probably the game that I've played the most in my life to through completion. I think the highway stage and like Chill Penguin stage and Mega Man X are two stages that I've probably played more than any two stages in any video game ever. That's more so than even the first bunch of stages in Super Mario World, Yoshi's Island, into Donut Plains. But yeah, I've played Mega Man X a lot. I've actually even, I completed it in back-to-back nights when I was at MAGFest in 2020. I've played it on streams. I've played it a long, long time. I think it's the best of the Mega Man games. I think it's just complicated enough to be more interesting than a lot of the original Mega Man games. And it's not too complicated to where it starts to turn people off. Like the Mega Man X games start to get very complicated as you get further on. Though I do think that Mega Man X4 is a very, very close second when it comes to the series. To me, it's always like the best Mega Man games are X and 2 and 3 and X4. And outside of that, there's some others, but that are really good. And a lot of games that I do like, especially like Mega Man 9 and 10. I like 7 and 8. But Mega Man X to me is just a complete experience. All of the bosses are memorable. The music's memorable. It feels like an upgrade. It feels like the series grew up to meet the Super Nintendo. It's in the future. You get introduced to Zero. You get introduced to Sigma. So better villains, really. Like, it's not as cartoonish. Like, I love the cartoony aspect of the original Mega Man series. Keiji Inafune obviously does incredible work. And I'm not always like Mr. Edgelord. Like, I'm not like a Zack Snyder guy, but there's something cool about the kind of maturation of Mega Man X into this game that's a little bit more serious while still being very colorful and very fun and very fast. And I think that's what makes it even better, having kind of like this slide technique and wall kick technique that are kind of in the game inherently, gives you this incredible sense of movement. You can move so quickly through stages in Mega Man X because of the slide. And or the it's not even like a slide, because in Mega Man he gets a slide in the older games, but it's like
a dash.
Yeah, it's the dash. It really is the dash. It's the dash that makes it really good. It's like a slide dash, because you can really jump out of that really well and really propel yourself like across these stages. And this is like the one game that I know like inside and out, right? If you give me an hour, I could beat Mega Man X with every item. I could beat all the bosses, like to the point where like it's not even hard for me anymore to clear this game, which is hilarious, because I remember being a kid and always having a really hard time with the final Sigma you fight in this game. But Mega Man X was a game that I got on the Super Nintendo. I'd already liked Mega Man games. I'd played Mega Man 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and a little bit of 1. And by the time Mega Man X comes out, I actually think Mega Man X comes out before 6. They might be the same year, and I think Mega Man X might be earlier that year. But X comes out, is on the Super Nintendo. It looks totally different. It's something I remember being a kid and being like, Mega Man 10, what happened to 6, 7, 8, 9? But it wasn't. It was a wholly new kind of environment with new characters. And I think introducing kind of the rival slash anti-hero in Zero, I think was really cool. I think he was a very cool character, especially later when they give him like a lightsaber. You have Vile, who kind of looks like Boba Fett, as like Sigma's like number two guy. You have Sigma, who is just a really great boss and an incredible boss fight. This game has just really great, memorable monsters and robot masters. You got some classic stuff, like you got Mets running around still, but you got characters like Chill Penguin, Storm Eagle, Sting Chameleon, Launch Octopus, Boomer Quanger, Spark Mandrill, Flame Mammoth, Storm Eagle, like great stuff, memorable stages, and just a game that I will go back to frequently, just to like hop into it for a little bit or play it to completion. So if we're ever bored, Matt, and you're like, hey, Mike, show me Mega Man X, I will tell you to give me an hour and I'm pretty sure I could get through it.
Yeah, Mike, great pick. As some of these picks for both of us might be a little predictable, this one for sure, being a Capcom game.
Well, yeah, that also...
It helps on your list.
Yeah, my top 10 is incredibly well populated with Capcom, Square, and Nintendo.
But it's
games.
Great. And what I love about this game in particular, you mentioned most of it, but if you show someone Mega Man's 1 through 6 on the NES, the average person's going to say they look identical. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's some graphical fidelity from 1 to 2 to 3, things they tweak in the actual mechanics, and it do run a little better. But X was this, like you said, this giant leap. You got these visual armor upgrades to actually Mega Man's character. And the Blue Bomber never felt as, like you said, mature and cool. Yeah. So a great pick, awesome game. It's remarkable actually watching Mike, because I feel like when I watched you play this game, I was watching a professional speedrunner. And I mean that, I don't say that lightly. It was very impressive watching your run.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I think I did it on Twitch, probably during the pandemic. I feel like it was during COVID. I'm like, all right, I'm just going to play. I had the Super Nintendo Mini out and I was just like, all right, I'm going to play that. But I'll do something like that again. I have an analog Super NT now with every Super Nintendo game, access to pretty much every Super Nintendo game.
But this game is very accessible. The Mega Man X collections, like you said, is that on the SNES Mini?
It is.
That's
it is.
Awesome that Capcom lent it to Nintendo for that. But it's also on, like, not the best way to play it, but you can get it on like iPhones and iPads as well. It's just such an accessible game, and it's good in any form factor, really.
Yeah, I mean, they make this game incredibly accessible, I think, for a reason. And I do think it's one of the core experiences of what makes the Super Nintendo the Super Nintendo.
Absolutely. I think this game is as SNES as it comes, and it's a great first pick and a great number 3 from you, Mike. So
Thanks, Matt. I appreciate that. It's a great pick.
I'm going to now follow up with my number 3, and it's probably a little more obscure. I'd say your average gamer has probably, especially if you're not into RPGs and JRPGs, you probably haven't played Grandia 2.
Oh!
And Grandia 2 harkens back to my Dreamcast days, the little console that was. It meant such a bright future for Sega and gamers, and fortunately, it let an untimely end, but it had some really good games on it, some good RPGs, this being one of them. And what's funny about it is, at the time, I had never played Grandia 1. I jumped into this one on the Dreamcast without any prior information on the prequel, which, it's different characters, different world. They're not connected. This is one of the few times I've ever jumped into a franchise without playing anything earlier in the series. But you didn't have to, which was great. But there were so many things I loved about this game. What I loved first was the story. You have this main character, Ryudo, who he kind of feels like some of the Square protagonists, where he's kind of a jerk. He's kind of rough around the edges. He doesn't have great manners. But by the end, he falls for a girl. He wants to help a girl. He becomes this nice, softer guy. And he does have a soft spot for doing the right thing, even when he can make more money as a mercenary. He's this Geohound, which is a fancy name in this world for a mercenary. And his job is to escort Elena, which hired by the church. So it's got this kind of church side to it, with gospel side to it. It's kind of fun, where they're trying to seek the Pope to cleanse her of all these demons and these rituals. It's kind of got this kind of cool story. And you introduce to this character, Melania, who's kind of like this dark, sultry woman as well. It's got some really cool characters and plot. But what for me did it when I was, I don't know, a teenager. I don't know when this game came out as far as age. We're talking 2000.
I feel like that, yeah, it's definitely around 2000.
So
yeah.
I'm 15, 16 years old. It was the gameplay. The art style was nice, had a nice animated art style to it. But it was the gameplay, it was the combat. I was never a big JRPG guy, so it's funny that my list, you're going to see one or two compromise my list. But I loved the gameplay, how it's kind of like an active Battlefield a little bit. Mm-hmm. And you have to actually time your attacks and your co-op attacks based on where you're on the battlefield and where the enemies are. It's very strategic. It's not just your old-fashioned JRPG where you're all standing in squads or standing distance from each other and can attack from any distance. It's the timing of it really matters, and it makes you kind of think as you play, and as your gauge kind of fills up, then you can attack with each character. So one of my favorite games of all time. I've replayed it a few times, but only once to completion, which is kind of when you have a game that's 20 hours, give or take, you don't always play it multiple times. But now that it's on the Switch, they did an HD remaster, which was rough when it released. They've patched it now where it's in good shape. It's a good accessible way for anyone to play this game. And it's fun. If you're not the biggest RPG fan, it's still a good enough story. It's approachable. It's a linear world to explore, and definitely recommend it.
Yeah, no, Grandia 2 is a great game. It's definitely one of those games too that I think it's better than the first game.
Yeah.
In the series, I think video games do that a lot, where the sequels are tend to be better. Grandia 2 has always been just a really great experience. There were some great RPGs in the Dreamcast, and Grandia 2 and Skies of Arcadia are like at the top of that
those
list.
Are the two. Yeah.
To the point where I think Grandia 2 was like ported almost immediately to the PS2 once the Dreamcast kind of died.
Correct. Yeah, it launched on the Dreamcast, but it did come to the PS2. And then, as I said, we got the HD versions. There was a PC port that was mediocre. And then there were follow-ups to Grandia 2. There were sequels, but none of them really were as good as or really made the waves that Grandia 2 did.
Yeah, nothing kind of got there. You have to also realize,
I think there was three and Extreme, I think, were the two.
I think you're right. Now, Grandia was done by... The original Grandia was also on the Sega Saturn, which is kind of cool. So Grandia, for those of you who are not as acquainted, was developed by Game Arts.
Yep.
Game Arts, who famously worked on the Lunar games, or the Lunar games, however you're supposed to pronounce it. Yeah, I think it's the Lunar games. So that kind of vibe is all there. They're really not around as much as they used to be. No. I don't even know if Game Arts still is around. The last games that they worked on were these Grandia remasters. And they also did like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. But
it's
game
funny
Arts
when you look at their info, it says they actually teamed up to work on Smash Brawl in some capacity. They co-developed it with Nintendo. So it's interesting how they jumped on to a few other different projects. But you're right. The Lunar series and Grandia really are their claims. There's probably 30 or 40 games on their page. Now, also published by Ubisoft, which it doesn't feel like a Ubisoft game because, again, they had really no part in development. But they definitely helped publish it, which I don't know that they publish other game arts games.
Yeah, I don't even know what Ubisoft was kind of doing at this time either. This wasn't the Ubisoft that we know now. This was like, they at that point in time, I feel like Ubisoft was just making like Rayman games and stuff like that. Like this is way before Rayman and like the Tom Clancy stuff, like early Tom Clancy stuff.
But this is different, right, than the Ubisoft we know now where they're making, they got all these different titles and franchises. So this was a really cool release, a game that I think is still thought of fondly on the Dreamcast. Like you said, this with Skies of Arcadia, it reviewed well, like 90 on Metacritic and on the Dreamcast. Really good. I mean, really well-respected game and a little obscure for a favorite game, but it hit the right notes for me, Mike.
No, it's a great time. And it's just the Dreamcast is just such a cool console. And it's 25 years old this year. So it'll be nice to see what that brings us.
That just means we're getting older. Mike, that's my number three. Again, probably no particular order, but that's my first to discuss. Why don't you throw us your next title?
Yeah, sure. My next game on the list is also a game that could easily be number one for myself and many other people all over the world. But we talked about this game at full length and to the full extent, but it would be impossible to talk about the Super Nintendo without talking about its finest game, in my opinion, which is Super Mario World. Probably the best 2D platformer ever made, arguably the best Mario game ever made, and arguably the best video game ever made, depends on how far you want to take that. Super Mario World is a game, to me, that has only gotten better with time. I remember being a kid and you play Super Mario World and you're like, this is awesome. And I was like 6 years old when it first came out and you think it's awesome and you play a bunch of it, you figure it out and you go all over the place and you find a couple of the secrets, you play through the game, you talk about it more with your friends, you go back, you find some more secrets, you hopefully eventually get to the 96 exits and you get all the special stages and all that. This game is just chock full of stuff that we wouldn't really see that in other games pretty much ever. The thing with Mario and Mario World is that it gives you secrets that actually kind of like give you more game. And while there are always bonus stages and stuff like that, it's easy for us to forget like how novel that was at the time, where it's just like, oh, no, there's more game. There's an extra 8 stages if you do all this stuff. And after you do that, it completely changes the way the game looks and you get to almost play almost, it feels like a new game plus. It's not really, but it's kind of like that. And this is in 1991, right? So this is an old game. This is the launch title for the Super Nintendo. And at that time period, people were comparing it to Sonic and Sonic was better because of X, Y, or Z. Then Donkey Kong Country came out and Donkey Kong Country was quote unquote better because of X, Y, and Z, and it looked better and it had this crazy music, and it does. I mean, Donkey Kong Country at the time did look better because it was just so unique to see kind of almost stuff that looked like 3D models running around on this incredibly, like, I mean, the Donkey Kong Country games still look incredible for that time period, and obviously they were sold completely on graphics. But by the time you get to Super Mario World, and then you by the time you get to Donkey Kong Country 2, you realize that they learned a lot from Super Mario World by giving you extra stages and giving you all this other stuff. But Super Mario World is so good because the stages are big enough for you to explore. The power-ups allow you to, though limited, right? The number of power-ups in Super Mario World is way less than the number of power-ups in Super Mario 3. But the power-ups in World have more intent. You go and play Super Mario 3, which is a wonderful game, and possibly the second best Mario game, if not in the top few. Definitely the first or second best 2D Mario game for sure. A lot of those abilities kind of do the same thing. Like, all right, the Tanuki suit does the same thing the Raccoon suit does. It's just
another skin.
Yeah, it's just a skin. Yep. It's a skin. And with that, oh, you can turn into a statue. It's like, okay, how often does anyone actually use that? Or you'll get like the Fire Flower, which is awesome. We love the Fire Flower. Or the Hammer Brothers suit, which looks cool, but really, come on. How different is that than the Fire Flower? The Frog suit's completely useless. So in the end, I do think, though, that Super Mario Brothers 3 walked so Super Mario World could run and fly. And the cape is so interesting. It's such an interesting power-up, especially for the time. It's very versatile. It can attack enemies. It could allow you to kind of fly forever. It gives you that dive bomb attack. I mean, this is crazy stuff. The fire flower is incredible. It's, like I said, it's well-intentioned. And you kind of need these abilities. You need these powers to get through the game to find secrets. Like, the cape is so integral to so many of the secrets in the game, whether you have to find a key or anything like that, or fly under a stage, or what I'm talking about is a bunch of stuff like that. And then it adds Yoshi, which is so impressive at the time. Like, clearly Nintendo has said that they wanted to include some sort of rideable ally in earlier Mario games. I think by the time Mario 2 or Mario 3 came along, they wanted to put something Mario could ride in it, like a Torser, in this case Yoshi. However, it just didn't work on the NES for them. Like, they didn't have the processing power. Now, games like Super Adventure Island, not Super Adventure Island, but some of the Adventure Island games allow you to kind of like ride a little dinosaur. But those games are almost like infinite runners, where you're always moving forward and you're just kind of jumping. In a game like Mario, where the world is kind of your like playground, Yoshi becomes almost like a sequence break. And the things that you could do with Yoshi and the versatility of Yoshi's powers, whether it's based on the color or the color of shell that he has in his mouth, or the ability to eat things and regurgitate stuff and spit stuff out and shoot fireballs and fly and stomp. And it is so crazy. And this game just has so much going for it. Not just the 96 exits. It's just, it really is a full contiguous world, which is why I always said, and I said this in our episode, why the music doesn't change. Because it's like you're playing through different movements or different variations on the theme, because you're still traversing the same world. And the stages are long. Like, you can zip through them, sure, but like, there are some, they're really well-crafted and really masterfully done. And I like Super Mario Brothers Wonder a whole lot as well. And clearly that's drawing influence from World, as does New Super Mario Brothers U. So often I would consider this game the best game ever made. It's definitely the best 2D Mario game, in my opinion. And I think it's one of the most special games ever. It's only number two on my list because there's one that'll beat it. But yeah, this game is really special. And I think it changed gaming when it came out.
Yeah, Super Mario World's an excellent pick, Mike. It's really, when people don't always, when they're comparing Mario Brothers 3 to Mario World, because there's usually people support one over the other. And I don't know why we can't just like both, chocolate and vanilla. But
I think that's just a symptom of the internet culture that we live in and the world we live in.
I think that's, you're probably right, but what you're right that Mario Brothers 3 needed to walk so World can run, but what we forget sometimes is how polished Super Mario World is. It's probably one of the most polished games for the scale that it was showing, and it didn't come out much after 3. I mean, in Japan it was very quick to turn around, in US as well. 3, which I love 3. I think it's a fantastic game.
Me too.
But it's almost like a half-cocked game at times, where things don't always pan out. There's some very tricky levels that don't really have any intention or thought process to why you're doing certain things. Some things are kind of glitchy in the game that you can kind of break.
Yeah.
Mario World is so incredibly polished and thought out. Like you said, the levels, the items, everything is so well crafted for your experience. And some people say it's a little easier, but there's definitely challenging aspects to Mario World as well. So it's, I think, almost the perfect video game. I know people, like you've said, say it's one of the most, if not the greatest game of all time, but a fantastic number two pick after you and me. Not that we picked obscure picks. Mega Man X is respected, but it's not everyone's top three of all time.
Oh, definitely not. Yeah.
This game definitely would fit in most people's categories.
I think so. This game is fantastic. And yeah, no shade at Super Mario 3. I love that game. That game's fantastic.
Sure. And if I made a 20 that or 10, that Mario 3 would probably be on it. You know?
Yeah, probably. I would say almost certainly.
So great number two pick, Mike. And that's going to turn it back to me. And weird or funny enough, ironic enough, I have another JRPG on my list.
Wow. I think we've been doing this podcast for too long.
Whatever you've been doing, Mike, it's rubbing off, but I've only probably played a dozen to 15 JRPGs in my life. But when I do spend that amount of time dedicated to a world and the characters, and you're spending 20, 30, 40 hours in a game, it somehow becomes more impactful and more important to me, that experience, than maybe your average action adventure that's 8 to 10 hours, or your average video game.
Yeah, no, I fully understand that. Also, if you're someone who watches anime at all, you can see kind of how both have influenced each other. A lot of times playing a good RPG actually does feel like you're watching a series or you're watching an anime. So I think that's also part of it.
Well, that's a great lead-in for my number two game, because that game, excuse me, is heavily influenced by anime. And that game Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
Which is a Square, published and developed by Square. And this is on the Super Nintendo, which makes it, again, another Super Nintendo game on our list.
Yeah.
But the involvement of Akira Toriyama was something that is, to me, something that still impresses me. And I think it subconsciously impressed me when I was a kid, because I watched Dragon Ball. I love Dragon Ball. I don't think I consciously knew when I played this game as a kid and then as a teenager that I was playing a game where the characters and world were made up in part by Dragon Quest and Dragon Ball author and creator, character designer Akira Toriyama. Like, I didn't even know that.
So I'm pretty sure that Dragon Ball Z or Dragon Ball had, by the time Chrono Trigger comes out, I think Chrono Trigger comes out in
1995. Yeah.
So it comes out in August of 95 in America, only 3 months after it comes out in Japan. So they were working, they knew this was going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
Square is an incredible, was so prolific at this time period, but I don't think Dragon Ball Z had premiered yet in the United States. I think Dragon Ball had in 95, but I don't think Dragon Ball Z had premiered yet. So we wouldn't even know. This would be something that we would look back at later on. Now, if you go and play Dragon Quest, all those games are designed by Akira Toriyama, even today. And this game, Chrono Trigger, is a bit of a fever dream, because the director the directors on this game are kind of a dream team. Okay. So you start out with Takashi Tokita, who has been with Square for a long time. He worked on stuff like Parasite Eve, Final Fantasy VII,
yep,
Chrono Trigger. Then you have Yoshinori Kitase. Kitase is one of the guys over at Square that has worked on, first of all, he's the director on Final Fantasy VII and VIII, right? But he also worked on Chrono Trigger, but Final Fantasy V and VI, which Final Fantasy VI, which is crazy, releases only a year before this. So the way this worked is that everyone at Square, it was like all hands on deck to work on Chrono Trigger once they were done with Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah, it's like Square is playing with Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen at the same time here. It's just insane.
Exactly. You got Hinobu Sakaguchi working on this game. You have Akira Toriyama, obviously. You have Nobuo Uematsu doing some of the music. You have Yasunori Mitsuda doing most of the music. Mitsuda's music is very, very memorable and excellent. And the way this game kind of works is this game is really a collaboration between the folks over at Spike Chunsoft, who do Dragon Quest, and the guys over at Square did Final Fantasy. So this is really a correlation. It's before Square Enix even happened. Yep. So this is a dream project before we even can think about it. This would kind of be the equivalent of, say, like, I don't really know what
it's
you would compare
it to. It's so hard to say. I mean, this would be like taking the creator of two different series, which you have Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy, and then an acclaimed designer, character, anime artist coming together. I can't even find another parallel to this, Mike. It's really like a one-of-a-kind, unique situation.
Yeah, the only parallel I could find in this situation would be like if Capcom and Namco worked together to make, and they already did this, so whatever, but it's like it's kind of equivalent to like Tekken versus Street Fighter, right?
Sure.
You're taking two incredibly established franchises and bringing them together, but in that day and age, in the 90s, this is not something you did.
Right.
So it's really crazy, and I love that this is your number two.
Yeah, this game, usually gun to my head, if someone says, what's the greatest game of all time to you, I say this game. Now again, there's always sub questions. Are you going by replayability? Well, I'm not going to play a game like this once a year. Some people do, and I love that. I like shorter experiences for replayability.
Yeah, of course.
But this game, it did so many really cool things. First off, it is a very approachable JRPG. There's not a ton of systems and combat things you need to learn. It's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
The enemies you see on the map, so there's not as many random encounters, which, again, I do enjoy that. The battle system lets you do these co-op attacks, which I love. Mm-hmm. So you can take like a Luca, which is one of the characters in Chrono, and they can both use a move together, and it could be like Cyclone Tech plus Flame Toss, and now you get Flame Whirl, and it does like these really cool combo moves. And then the characters themselves, Chrono, which I always wondered why Chrono doesn't have the H in his name like Chrono Trigger does.
Yeah, I don't know. I it's confusing to me. It might just be a whole
translation
of,
thing. I don't know.
Yeah, it probably works something. Better. The katakana on it is probably.
Probably.
You know,
but this game had great characters. I love the frog. I love the character you can convert to your friend. And he becomes the villain. So you got Frog and Magus.
Magus
are great characters. They all just are so identifiable. I love that everything you do, just about most of big choices and events in the game lead to different endings, and the court, the decisions of the court, all your actions actually play a part in getting, then again, you get the true ending at the end of the game. Your character, spoiler, gets killed. You have to bring him back. You have to bring Chrono back. There's New Game Plus, which again, wasn't always a standard thing in these games. And just traveling, the whole time system was so cool. I mean, traveling through the different eras was just so much fun. This game was so impactful to me, and it's a game that I do want to replay again. I've started and probably played the first like 50% a bunch of times and only completed start to finish once. And that's just more a symptom of me. I don't replay RPGs that often, but I guess if we ever get that Dreamed HD remaster of some sort like you got with some of your favorite games of late, I would definitely revisit this game more intensely.
I think that's likely. I think Square,
next couple of years.
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to do like Final Fantasy VII remake with it. I think they'll just. I honestly think for Chrono Trigger, I think Chrono Trigger is the game that benefits is a game that benefits more for like an HD 2D than say a full blown 3D remake, because I think these graphics in the HD 2D style will just look so incredibly good. We saw how good Star Ocean Second Story R looked. We saw how good the Live Alive remake looked. Octopath Traveler 1 and 2, Triangle Strategy. These games look so good. It just makes the most sense for this to be like an HD 2D remaster or remake, and I think it deserves it.
I think it would do much better than a game like Live Alive or even Octopath, because the game is recognizable. Even to younger gamers, this game is kind of a legend at this point, and it'll make it more approachable.
This feels like a 3 million seller, maybe which, a 4 to 5 million, which is good.
I don't know the really development cost. I've always wanted to know ports, HD remasters. What does it cost to bring a game to a modern console? I'd think a lot cheaper than something from the ground up, but there's still a cost to it. But I think a game like Chrono Trigger, which a lot of people consider one of the greatest games of all time, could do some numbers.
Yeah, it's definitely up there in terms of best games of its generation, best games of all time, best RPGs ever. This is, for most people out there, Chrono Trigger is really a top 20.
Yeah, it's on a lot of lists.
It's a top 20 game for sure.
While Grandia 2 is not common on people's top three lists, Chrono Trigger is common, as is Super Mario World. So that's my number two. Mike, hit us with the big one. Hit us with your last of your top three games.
Yeah, so, I mean, you all know this because I say it all the time, but I'm going to just do it again because it's fun. So my favorite game of all time has always been, at least since 1996, has been Super Mario RPG. And I think the reason why that's my favorite game is it because it really is a combination of everything that I like. First of all, Mario is my favorite video game character. Actually, I think Mario might be my favorite fictional character across all medium. And I love Mario games. I've always loved Mario games. I also love role-playing games. And I love platformers. And this game does all of that while having an incredible sense of humor, while being incredibly well-written, while having incredible music from Yoko Shimomura. And it's just a fantastic time. It's not a very long game. This is like a 10-hour, maybe 12-hour RPG, which is super refreshing. And it gives you all of the good feels from an RPG while being manageable and playable in a new era. I think the fact that it's turn-based, but requires you to input some more timed hits and things like that, time blocks. I think that all of that stuff just makes the combat system so much more intriguing. I always say this, like people, for years, people were saying the turn-based is dead. And I don't think it is, because there's plenty of turn-based games out there. Final Fantasy is not doing turn-based anymore because they've moved on. But they have aspects of, at Square, they have teams at Square that makes strictly turn-based games. And that's great. And I think that's great because it's something for everyone. But turn-based, simple turn-based games in this day and age can get very, very boring very, very quickly. So games like Super Mario RPG, which give you some sort of control over kind of like the timing of things, dealing more damage, blocking, powering up your super moves, like that's everything, right? That adds so much. And if Chrono Trigger, which released only a year before Mario RPG, which is crazy, if Chrono Trigger was a dream project, then this is even more of a dream project because it only happened the one time, right? Square would eventually acquire Enix. Akira Toriyama technically now works for Square when he designs Dragon Quest games. But Square and Nintendo working together in, from what, in a project, from what I understand, was discussed in an elevator. Chrono Trigger was discussed between like Sakaguchi and like the Dragon Quest guys, like over beer. Like they went out, they all got drunk, they talked about making a game together, and then they did it. From what I understand, someone from Square was in an elevator at Miyamoto, and Miyamoto said to them, now this is all apocryphal, so I have no idea. This could be 100% false. He said to them, hey, you should put Mario in an RPG. And Square did it. Not sure if that was the actual conversation that happened, but Square did put Mario in an RPG. And it's honestly, in my opinion, it's my favorite game of all time. I could play this game backwards and forwards. I know where all the secrets are. I can get everything, all the special stuff. I've played this game. This is how I used to start my summer vacation pretty much every year. Like the first week of my summer vacation every year would be me playing through Mario RPG, which I don't replay too many games, but this is one of them that I do just because to me, it's such a comfort. It's such a joy. It's such a wonderful, fun, joyous time to just sit and play this simple, fun RPG that has a whole lot of heart and an incredible cast. I'm looking at Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and I think that's probably the best role-playing game cast of all time. I think Final Fantasy VII has the best cast of... I love Final Fantasy VI. That game's incredible. But every character in Final Fantasy VII is memorable and unique and different and amazing. And I'm happy that Final Fantasy VII is more in the conversation now, because I think the remakes have only improved that to be better and improved just our connection with that game. But Super Mario RPG is just a special experience. And it's a game that has an incredible cast, has incredible music, incredible boss fights, incredible enemies, memorable. Everything about this game to me is super memorable. And I don't think Nintendo has even gotten close when it comes to making role-playing games with Mario since then. There have been very good ones. Paper Mario is an excellent game. Paper Mario Thousand Year Door is an excellent game. Mario and Luigi, those games are great. But there's something about Mario RPG that is just that much more special than the rest. And I think that's the touch from Square. I think that's a game that has higher stakes. I think the story that our dreams won't come true and our wishes won't come true if we don't save the day, I think that's incredibly mature for a kid's game. I think that's a step further than stopping Bowser. And you get to play with Bowser on your team, which is amazing. And Smithy, the villain, is great. He's this extra planner, essentially, he's this extra planner Smith, blacksmith, who wants to replace everyone with robots. It's amazing. And it's a really great time. And it's my favorite game. It's been my favorite game forever. And nothing's even come close in terms of like, I've never had that discussion. Oh, maybe this isn't my favorite anymore. And the last time I thought that, they announced the remake. And then I played the remake, and the remake is unbelievable.
It just probably cemented it for you more. Just,
yeah, playing through the remake and going through that again and playing the extra content after the game, it only made my feelings similarly to how Final Fantasy VII Remake had only strengthened my feelings for Final Fantasy VII and its cast and everything about it. Playing the remake of Super Mario RPG, which is probably the most accurate remake of all time, mm-hmm. or the most faithful, playing that remake with its quality of life improvements and all that stuff only made me love this game more. And it's my favorite. And always will be, probably.
Yeah, it had that secret sauce that you said, and there's been great games that Mario's been in that have been RPG style. But this game had that secret sauce, and maybe it was Square. And it's really a marvel. I remember when my friend said to me years after this game had come out, and I believe it was on the Wii Virtual Console, and he said, I can't believe you haven't played this game. And I think I played it over that summer. And I said, man, did I just miss out and just witness and play one of the most just perfect video games. Just such a good time. And they made it approachable. They made it fun. They made it funny.
Yeah.
The timed attacks, something that's just missing from turn-based RPGs. And anytime it's incorporated, I love that in Final Fantasy VIII. Timed attacks just make a game just feel like you're more involved.
Yep. I agree with that completely. And it's funny because, like, when the remake came out, all my friends messaged me. But what's even cooler about that is that, like, now, because the remake's out now, it wasn't the most accessible game. It was on the Super Nintendo Mini. It was on a couple of the virtual consoles, but it wasn't, like, everywhere. I know so many people that played it for the first time, that played it with the remake. They played the remake for the first time, and it's resonating with people again, right? It's become this special experience for a lot of people now. And I think it's good. It makes me feel validated, right? It makes me feel validated as a gamer that, oh, no, dude, this is the most joyful video game experience around, right? Because it has all of the quirkiness and fun and heart of a JRPG. It even gives you two kind of Square Enix stock characters.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Gino,
I hope they get more love now that the HD remake is out. Yeah. I hope Gino and Mallow get some more love. And I don't know what that would be. Would it be in a Square project? Would Square and Nintendo ever work together again if this game sold well enough? But two wonderful characters.
I think if Square doesn't get purchased by Sony or Microsoft, I think we will see these characters again.
I think so too.
And I
don't
think,
know what capacity. It might not be another game like this, but I'd like to see them come back.
I think there might be a sequel.
But could we toss them in Mario Kart? Could we toss them in the next Smash Brothers? I mean, they feel like Nintendo characters. And although they feel like Square characters, they feel like they belong in a Nintendo Mario game.
They're very much Square characters given to us through a Nintendo lens, because Gino is essentially, you name the Final Fantasy protagonist.
Yep.
He might as well be the Warrior of Light.
Sure.
He's even kind of dressed like the Warrior of Light. Instead of wearing armor, he's got this cool little hood and cape. He's a little bit like Bartz from Final Fantasy V. He's a little bit like Locke from Final Fantasy VI. So he kind of does have that. He's got that kind of mystical kind of thing. And Mallow is essentially your Moogle character, your mm-hmm. Cate Sith.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that those are the Square characters. And I will say this much, the fact that they wanted to put, I think it was Wario. There was supposed to be a section. There was concept art had come out recently, and there was supposed to be a section where, like, you fight the three musketeers, and the three musketeers are like when someone else or Mario has it. Like, it's amazing. And I think there's a lot of good ideas there that they could visit again, because Nintendo has kind of eased their grip on people messing around with their characters. And I think that as they look to work with more partners for their first party platforms, we saw that Nintendo is eagerly going after companies to work on first party Nintendo projects. I really do think that Square and Nintendo will team up at least one more time before Square gets purchased by another company. And I hope, cross my fingers, hope that we will get to see,
I mean, even seeing
our friends again.
Final Fantasy VII characters, the Smash Brothers also means there's mm-hmm. communications. The lines are open.
Yep. I mean, everyone wants their character in Smash. Yeah. So, yeah.
So, excellent pick. Really one of the all-time games. We've talked about it even recently because of the HD release. So, a game that even if you're not an RPG fan, please experience this game. It's a reason why it's Mike's number one game. So, definitely give it a shot. And that leads me to my third game. And this is a game that I bought the N64 at launch. This is when I was a full-fledged gamer.
Oh, baby.
And a new console was coming out. And I was now old enough to say, I read a magazine. It's coming out this day. I saw it in a Toys R Us ad. I need to have it at launch. And I got my Nintendo 64. I got Super Mario 64. Now, the problem was the TV I had was not compatible. I needed a certain wire or box. I think it's called the RF box.
Oh, you were just an RF-only TV?
Yeah, that was the TV that I had, whether it was my parents' TV, my TV. I had a game that I could not play. I had the system hooked up and I could not play it for at least 24 or 48 hours, which
That's
if you're
brutal.
A 10-year-old, 12-year-old kid, whatever I was, awful, really brutal. And then I remember finally getting the wire, hooking it up, and seeing Mario, or Mario as he's properly pronounced, seeing just popping out of the tube and just controlling him in a 3D space. There's something I will never forget for the rest of my life. And I still think to this day, people poke holes, poke flaws at the camera, at the polygon, the models, certain aspects of the game that might seem janky in 2024. This game is still perfect to me. I don't see any of that. I control the camera with no problem. I know how to navigate it when you're in the volcano and you're trying to turn and do that pole jumping because the camera's not great. I can see past all that and see this game as you successfully made the sandbox game, these sandbox levels, and I felt like Mario platforming around. And I think it's maybe not the greatest video game all ever made, but for me, it always will be on my top games list. And Mario World versus Mario 64, it's like comparing apples to oranges as far as what each of them are doing. They're both marvelous in completely different ways.
I agree. I think you're right. I think it's a hard comparison to make.
Yeah, I think people do that with Zeldas and Mario all the time. And it's like, I love both the games, 3D and 2D, but what Mario 64 did was the impossible. I mean, 3D games at PS1 and N64 before and after this were bad. Most games like this were bad. I mean, the level design was bad. The control didn't feel right. This hit all those things where the levels are great. The control of the character was great. And obviously, they make improvements over time, but playing this game now in 2024 on the now hard to get 3D All-Stars collection.
I wonder who has two of them.
Mike has a sealed copy. So if anyone out there wants to overpay him, he might be willing to part with it.
I'll tell you right now, I have a sealed copy of that, but the one that I have that's actually already jumping up in value, and I might have to follow your lead and get it graded. I have the Pixel Remaster Collection, the ESRB one, sealed.
Yeah. So that is very limited, very hard to find. But yeah, this game, even if you play it on the quote-unquote 3D All-Stars HD collection, it's marvelous. Getting 120 stars. I love watching the runs. People figure out a few seconds they can shave off on speed runs.
Yeah.
There's always something new they're doing. And I like to think I'm pretty good at this game, but I'm not a tenth of as good as these guys are. This game will always impress me. And I will always think that Sunshine and some of the games to follow took some steps back. And while even Galaxy, a phenomenal game, in some ways it took some steps back from what 64 did as far as level design, the hub world, and all the things, the amazing things that it did. So that will always be a game to me that impresses. While, again, this is a game that's more replayable for me than the other two on my list. I can play this game every year or two and go do a whole 120 star run. And I can usually do it in a few days. I can probably do it in several hours, just do a quick 120 star run of the game. They start to get a little harder when you get to the TikTok clock level, the rainbow carpet level.
Those levels, terrible.
I agree, are not as well made. And it's funny, they're towards the end of the game. So were they trying to meet a deadline? Were they supposed to be harder? So they put them at the end, but that's probably where the game's just not as good.
It's just tedious, but it's a fantastic game. I think Mario 64 is, if it's not like the single best game of all time, I think Mario 64 is definitely the most important.
It's very important.
Yeah.
We don't get Ocarina and we don't get God of Wars. There's so many 3D games.
You don't get video games
if this game doesn't exist.
Modern video games don't exist in the context that they do if you don't have Mario 64. Like, Mario 64 essentially kills the Saturn.
Yeah, it does. It destroys 32-bit consoles. Saturn 32-bit as well as PS1?
Saturn, PS1 does a lot of 3D stuff, but you can tell that after Super Mario 64 comes out, the push was like, everything needs to be 3D. Oh my God, this changed everything. Like, obviously, you need Doom first a little bit.
Yep.
Like, Doom is very, very important in 93, but Mario 64, it's like that game is as influential to future Mario games as it is to Grand Theft Auto. Like that whole open kind of world.
And
it was kind of an open world too.
It kind of is an open world. And it's weird because it's almost the best game on the console and it's the game you get at launch. And it's so funny when that can happen. And
it happens a lot.
It does. But
with Nintendo consoles.
You would think like graphics, gameplay, mechanics would get better. In this case, it's almost like the system peaked. Everything else was concepts. Smash Brothers and Mario Kart, they later iterations do it better. This was phenomenal. So yeah. this is the tops for me.
It's like if you have an N64, which I do, and I will spend money on that analog N64 because I'm a lunatic. I really hope analog does a CD one. I hope they do a CD console that just does PlayStation 1 and 2 and Saturn and Dreamcast. Like, that would be amazing. But the thing with the N64, there's really like two or three games that are really worth your time. Mario 64 is it. It's like Mario 64, Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask.
Maybe Banjo you can throw in
there. Maybe the first Banjo. Yeah, the first Banjo is pretty good. But other than that, once you get there's a couple of games, some other games I really like. I even like Bomberman 64. I like Jet Force Gemini. I like GoldenEye or Perfect Dark. Star Fox really good.
F-Zero's got a good one.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, I was probably being a little too reductive.
No, but there's definitely
10 to 15 games on tops on the
N64. There's some games that aged very poorly on this system.
And Star Fox, that's the only good one.
Yeah, it's the only
good Star Fox game. So and that game is excellent.
And no Metroid on the N64. So.
No, of course not, because you think the N64 could handle the Metroid? Jeez.
So Mario 64, I look back and I look at the diversity. Even water levels don't seem so bad in this game.
No, they're not as bad.
It's really not. There's just some diversity to the gameplay. You could be sliding down levels. You could be wall jumping, platforming, flying, going metal. There's really diversity. It really was a great build off of your choice, Super Mario World. It really did build off it very well.
It's a fantastic experience. I've always had the itch to kind of go back and play Super Mario 64.
All the time.
I do have an Eon, which allows me to play it on my HDTV with minimal issues. So maybe I'll sit down and play it.
The Switch version's not bad either. If you have a digital,
it's not bad
as well. Yeah,
I do.
So that was our three games for our 150th episode. Quickly, Whee! Mike, I want to ask you, did you have any honorable mentions that might have just missed the list and you want to shout out?
Yeah, I'll give you a bunch because you threw this on me last, which I like. I always appreciate that. To give them to you quick, once we get outside of the top three, I'm going to get a little bit more RPG heavy, but I will say this much. Final Fantasy Tactics is up there. Final Fantasy VII, its remake. Final Fantasy IX. Those games that are in there as well. Resident Evil 4 is in there on the list. And its remake. I mean, I group Final Fantasy VII and the remake together at this point. I know I probably shouldn't, but I do. And you're going to have to get
both
over it.
Both games make each other better, if that makes sense.
It's so weird. And
it's
so true.
Weird.
It's so weird that
I loved 7, but there was a point before Remake came out where I thought, maybe the game's overrated. And then Remake came out, I'm like, no, 7's amazing, and 7's better now. 7 it's crazy.
Final Fantasy 7 is better now. Now, people will take that bit, that little soundbite, and it's like, yeah, because the remake is stupid. No, the remake is fantastic.
Phenomenal game.
It's the remake is like, for me, the remake might be... It's definitely my favorite game.
If I extended past three, many more, and it didn't make my honorable mention, but it was close to making it. That's how good it is.
That game's really, really good. Yeah. But Resident Evil 4 and its remake are in there. Street Fighter 2. Yeah, I like to do Street Fighter 2, like Super Street Fighter 2, Hyper Fighting, that one. The rest of it, it's hard for me to like think at this point in time, but I do love the Ratchet and Clank series. Those are in there.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're going to be in the top 10. Zelda's an interesting one. Because Zelda hovers. It's like, I really like Link to the Past. I really love that game. I've really started to love Link's Awakening since the remake. Obviously, I love Tears of the Kingdom. So there might be a Zelda game hovering at the bottom of that top 10. One of those. But yeah, that's what we're looking at. Guys, I really like, it's very, me for like a second, it's easy to figure out what I like.
Yeah, Capcom, Square, and Nintendo have done well by you, Mike.
Yes, they have.
Well, to stretch out my top threes, Batman Arkham Asylum is such comfort food for me. I just beat it again a couple weekends ago. It's just a joy. You mentioned two of them that are on my list, Super Mario World and Mega Man X. I mean, really perfect video games. If I just want replayability, I can sit down and play those games once or twice a year.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore those games. You mentioned Zelda. I have two on my honorable mentions, which is Link to the Past and Wind Waker, my favorite 2D, my favorite 3D Zelda games. Again, I can revisit Link to the Past again, every couple of years. Wind Waker, if it was on the Switch, I'd replay it more often. Nintendo, if you're listening.
I think it'll be on the Switch too.
I think so as well. And then if I don't mention this game, Mike will be happy. So I need to mention Dragon Ball Kakarot.
Oh, baby. Yeah.
The single greatest video game
I have ever made. I have to play that tournament. I'll say I have to do it.
It's phenomenal. I've logged 300 hours probably between playthroughs, and I have no regrets. Like, I'm ready to jump back in.
It's fun. No, I've played a bit of it. I like that game a lot.
Adore it. So we got some Batman, some Mario, some Mega Man, some Zelda. That's who I am. Those are my games. Those are my jams. So
yeah. Well, you got it. I appreciate that. I think it's awesome.
So that was our 150th episode. Woo! In the books. Really been, it feels like it's gone fast, but it also feels like at the same time we've been doing this a little while now, Mike.
Yeah, no, but I like it. So it's one of those things where time flies when you're having fun.
Absolutely. So this will hit you guys probably end of January. So hopefully we'll have had some game announcements and some cool things to talk about in the weeks and months to come. I'm sure 2024 will be a jam-packed year. And me and Mike have a lot of Hall of Fame games that we want to introduce, and then also some remasters we want to revisit from their...
Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready. Thank you for 150 episodes, Matt. This has been a joy.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure. So the world wants to know, where can they find you, Mike?
Sure, you can find me here on the Hall of Fame Video Game Podcast. You can also find me on my other podcast, the Batman-tastic Cast, where we talk about Batman, the animated series. You can find me with my band, Bad Mary. Search us out, badmary.com, or all things Bad Mary, Bad Mary Band, all over the internet. And last but not least, you can find me with Long Island Retro Gaming. Our convention, or expo, as we like to call it, is coming up in August, and you can buy tickets now. You can buy tickets now, which is incredible. That's going to be a really, really fun time. It's usually, I think it's the second weekend in August. I think it's like August 9th or the 11th of 2024 at the Cradle of Aviation here on Long Island. So, yep, find me.
Guys, go find Mike. Listen to our back catalog. Leave us a review. I hate begging. I hate pleading, but just leave us a nice Apple review. It does help us so much. We appreciate hearing from you guys. And get on our social medias. Get on our Instagram. I have a lot of fun just posting, whether it's about what we're recording each week or just some personal collection stuff. I might actually hit up Mike to send me some pictures of his collection to post as well.
Oh, please do. Just ask and I will send.
There we go. Guys, thank you so much for joining us for 150. We hope to do 150 more, and we'll see you guys all next time.
Later. From Mike and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Game Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.